Penguin Random House Audio presents Buried Deep and Other Stories by Naomi Novik. Read for you by Frankie Corzo, Anisha Dadia, Lisa Flanagan, Lauren Fortgang, Billy Fulford Brown, Elizabeth Nolden, Saskia Marleveld, Naomi Novik, L. Potter, Imani Jade Powers, Bronwyn Price, Nicholas Guy Smith, Simon Vance, and Steve West.
Author's note. I feel the need to warn you that this book is full of lies. Not the stories. The stories are as true as I could make them when I wrote them, but the introductions. When I'm finished writing something, it leaves me. If I tell you anything about these stories, the chances are extremely good that I made it up when an editor or an interviewer asked me months or years after I wrote the actual story, and now I misremember it as what I was thinking at the time, or it's what I think of them now, reading them again at a distance in some cases of decades. The real truth is that only the stories themselves can tell you what I was thinking. If I could put one of them into a few neat and tidy paragraphs, I wouldn't have bothered to write a story. There are no shortcuts in the labyrinth. So I have written introductions for these stories, but I invite you to ignore them, or to think of them as just that, introductions, as if we were at a party together, and I had to leave, but before I went, I wanted to haphazardly introduce you to a good friend of mine that I thought you might get on with, by telling you something sort of vaguely interesting about them, and then disappearing. And after I've gone, the friend might lean over and say, "Actually, that was all wrong. Let me tell you the truth. And you should believe them and not me." And after you have read them, your opinion will be at least as good as mine. Books don't have any pretense of living on their own, part of their magic. If you put the book down and go to the other room for a snack, the book will not go on without you. I've written these words, and other people have edited them and formatted them, and now we've recorded them. But we've come as far as we can go, and the rest of the journey is yours, if you choose to lend them your ears and your brain to live in for a little while. Naomi. Araminta, or The Wreck of the Amphidrake. My house growing up was full of words. My mother read widely. She had a specific taste in romance novels, thin and smooth, to be drunk up like a glass of wine in the evening, and the empties taken back to the used bookstore in large bags to exchange for a case of new ones, or ones that had been read long enough ago to be good to taste all over again. The Regencies were my favorites. Higher, of course, but almost any would do, except I had violent feelings about the ones that were wrong, by which I meant the ones where the characters were modern people playing dress-up in diaphanous muslins and riding in carriages, just pretending. Because I was interested in the rules, so inviolate and so obvious to the characters themselves, these people living inside narrow boxes, especially the women. In the short length of these books, their world couldn't be more real and complicated, so instead they had to believe in the rules, inhabit them, or else it didn't feel right. And I didn't mind if they cheated, but they had to be clever about it. So this is a Regency story, about a world with a different set of rules and a very good cheater.
Lady Araminta was seen off from the docks at Chenstow-on-Sea with great ceremony, if not much affection, by her assembled family. She departed in the company of not one, but two maids, a hired eunuch swordsman, and an experienced professional chaperone with the eye of Horus branded upon her forehead, to keep watch at night while the other two were closed. Sad to say, these precautions were not entirely unnecessary. Lady Araminta, the possessor of several other, more notable names besides, here omitted for discretion, had been caught twice trying to climb out her window, and once in her father's library, reading a spellbook. On this last occasion, she had fortunately been discovered by the butler, a reliable servant of 15 years, so the matter was hushed up, but it had decided her fate. Her father's senior wife informed her husband she refused to pay for the formal presentation to the court necessary for Araminta to make her debut. "I have 5 girls to see established besides her," Lady D said, "and I cannot have them ruined by the antics which are certain to follow." Lest this be imagined the fruits of an unfair preference, It will be as well to note here that Araminta was, in fact, the natural daughter of her ladyship, and the others in question her daughters in marriage, rather than the reverse. "It has been too long," Lady D continued, severely, "and she is spoilt beyond redemption." Lord D hung his head. He felt all the guilt of the situation, and deserved to. As a youth, he had vowed never to offer prayers to foreign deities such as Juno, and out of obstinacy he had refused to recant, so it had taken 3 wives and 14 years to acquire the necessary son. Even then, the boy had proven rather a disappointment, sickly and slight, and as he grew older, preferring of all things literature to the manly arts of fencing or shooting, or even sorcery, which would at least have been respectable. "But it is rather messy," young Avery said, apologetic but unmoving, even at the age of 7. He had inherited the family trait of obstinacy in full measure. It is never wise to offend foreign deities, no matter how many good old-fashioned British fairies one might have invited to the wedding. Meanwhile, Araminta, the eldest, had long shown more aptitude for riding and shooting than for the cooler arts, and had a distressing tendency to gamble. Where her mother would have seen these inappropriate tendencies nipped in the bud, Lord D, himself a notable sportsman, had selfishly indulged the girl. He liked to have company hunting when he was required at home to do his duty to his wives, and with 3, he was required more often than not.
"It is not too much to ask that at least one of my offspring not embarrass me on the field," had been one of his favourite remarks when chastised. So while her peers were entering into society as polished young ladies, beginning their study of banking or medicine, Lady Araminta was confirmed only as a sportswoman of excessive skill, with all the unfortunate results heretofore described. Something, of course, had to be done. So a match was hastily arranged with a colonial branch of a similarly exalted line. The rumours she had already excited precluded an acceptable marriage at home, but young men of good birth, having gone overseas to seek a better fortune than a second son's portion, often had some difficulty acquiring suitable wives. In those days, the journey took nearly 6 months and was fraught with considerable dangers. Storms and pirates both patrolled the shipping lanes. Leviathans regularly pulled down ships, mistaking them for whales, and strange fevers and lunacies thrived amid the undersea forests of the shallow sea, where ships might find themselves becalmed for months above the overgrown ruins of the drowned lands. Naturally, Lady Araminta was sent off with every consideration for her safety. The Blue Gill was a sleek, modern vessel, named for the long, brightly painted iron spikes, studded in a ridge down her keel to fend off the leviathans, and armed with no fewer than 10 cannon. The cabin had 3 locks upon the door. The eunuch lay upon the threshold outside. The maid slept to either side of Araminta in the large bed. The chaperone had a cot at the foot. And as the last refuge of virtue, she had been provided at hideous expense with a Tiresian amulet. She was given no instruction for the last, either in its use or in how it would act to preserve the virtue in question, and only told with great emphasis to always keep it in its box and put it on only if the worst should threaten, the worst having been described to her rather hazily by Lady D, who felt suspiciously that Araminta already knew a good deal too much of such things. There were not many tears in evidence at the leave-taking, except from Lady Ginevra, the next oldest, who felt it was her sisterly duty to weep, though privately delighted at the chance of advancing her own debut a year. Araminta herself shed none, only said, "Well, goodbye," and went aboard unrepentant, having unbeknownst to all concealed a sword, a very fine pair of dueling pistols, and a most inappropriate grimoire in her dower chest during the upheaval of the packing. She was not very sorry to be leaving home. She was tired of being always lectured, and the colonies seemed to her a hopeful destination.
A young man who had gone out to make his fortune, she thought, could not be quite...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?